Mending the Financial Rags?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. It's the morning open, a look at the economy as we check trading for the day. Markets just getting started, so let's ask that question. Where's Wall Street? Markets are up barely here at home. The S&P and NASDAQ up about a tenth of a percent. The Dow, too, up about 10 points at 10,237. Markets in Europe right now pretty much mixed. The FTSE down just a tad, but the DAX and the CAC 40 in Paris are up. And shares in Asia were up as well today. Julie Neiman is analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live from St. Louis this morning. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So at noon Eastern today, the Senate Banking Committee chairman will put forth this long-awaited proposal for financial regulation reform. Does Chris Dodd have a chance with all this?
He has a good shot. You know, everybody's going to be weighing in on this, but the need for regulatory reform is absolutely huge. The problem is there's nobody in the agencies who really understands the concept of risk, and they've all been, that's not on my table. I shouldn't be accountable for regulating that area. And so everything's been slipping through the cracks. This is the first attempt at getting some consolidation.
Sounds like a little game of hot potato, huh?
That's it, exactly. In other words, who's to blame? You know, but if you don't have anybody who's held accountable, then all the crooks, I mean the financial innovators, are going to find the gaps in there and continue to bring through instruments that have more risk than anybody can imagine or even start to govern.
Some of the major retailers, Julie, report this week, Macy's, Walmart, JCPenney, they report sales. And with yesterday's big rally, the market seems pretty confident that the numbers are going to be good. I mean, is it being too optimistic, do you think?
Well, I think everybody's trying to emulate Big Wally here. Yeah, a lot of retail sales are coming back to some extent here. But when they start talking about same-store sales, you have to remember what they've done is eliminate a lot of stores, so it's looking much better than it actually is. Black Friday is still going to be the key thing. Shoppers are waiting to see what kind of bargains they can get there. We're going to see a very decent Christmas from the standpoint that the stores have very lean inventories, but consumers are still concerned about their jobs. Job unemployment is rising, so it's going to still be a lean Christmas.
Julie Neiman from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
Thank you.
In an obvious attempt to slow the spreading of the flu this morning, a Senate committee is holding a hearing on a bill that would guarantee paid sick days for people affected by the regular strain or by H1N1. The House already looking at similar legislation. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
A lot of workers just get a lump of days off, period. They can use them either as sick or vacation days. Of course, no one wants to burn a vacation day, so you go to work sick. That's a problem if you have swine flu. The bill being considered at today's hearing is in response to the swine flu pandemic. Backers of the House bill say it would protect about 50 million workers with no sick leave. Many of them work in low-wage food service and hospitality jobs where they could make other people sick. The bill would cover workers in businesses with 15 or more employees. The National Small Business Association says the legislation could hurt small businesses. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, November 10th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Oil prices are back under $79 a barrel in Asia. Not-so-potent Tropical Storm Ida isn't expected to affect those Gulf of Mexico refineries much. The storm made landfall this morning on Dauphin Island, Alabama. Ensco International, the oil drilling company, says it's moving its headquarters from Dallas, Texas, to the United Kingdom. It says it wants to get closer to customers and pay less in taxes. What does that mean, you ask? Marketplace's Elisa Roth fills us in.
If your company has its headquarters here in the U.S., Uncle Sam wants a piece of the profits, no matter where you make that money. But the United Kingdom just switched from that worldwide taxation to a territorial system. So if your company is based there, you only pay UK taxes on money you earn in the UK. Then if you earn money in France, you pay French taxes on it, and so on. Roseanne Altshuler is the director of the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center.
The UK may not have looked attractive as a headquarter location as a worldwide country, but now that they've gone territorial, they may be just attractive enough to get the US corporations to move there.
And she says once companies move their headquarters abroad, other operations may follow. She says it's hard to know how much tax revenue would be lost if American companies started moving abroad en masse. And there is a law that makes it hard to leave just to avoid American taxes. I'm Alisa Roth for Marketplace.
Tomorrow is Veterans Day, and tonight, like every night, an estimated 130,000 vets don't have a place to live. About a third of all homeless men once served in the military. In Washington today, a Senate housing subcommittee will focus on efforts to bring that number down. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
The number of homeless veterans has been coming down over the past 5 years, but the Veterans Affairs Department is worried those improvements will vanish in an economy with double-digit unemployment and with more soldiers returning from war. Next year, the VA will spend over $3 billion on programs to reduce homelessness, including mental health treatments, college degree programs, more subsidized housing, and small business loans for veteran-owned enterprises.
Unfortunately, when we came around in the Vietnam era, they didn't have any of that.
John Rowan is president of the Vietnam Veterans of America. He's optimistic the VA can reach its goal of ending veterans' homelessness in 5 years.
If they do the right thing by the newer veterans, dealing with their post-traumatic stress disorder, they can get them in good enough shape to be able to take care of themselves.
Yesterday, the White House announced a government-wide effort to help vets identify job opportunities and reintegrate into civilian society. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Meanwhile, the media's version of military service continues to sell. The latest version of the video game Call of Duty hit the shelves just a few hours ago. It may become the best-selling game of all time, bringing in about $500 million or more in the next couple of months. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler plays along.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is a computer fantasy that plays out in virtual war zones. The video game is the latest installment in a popular series.
They call it a first-person shooter. They've been able to evolve this genre to levels not seen before in this sector.
That's Jesse Divnick with the market research firm Electronic Entertainment Design and Research. He says strong demand for Call of Duty could boost sales of other video games.
We play a great video game, and we instantly start to think, hey, what else is out there that I can play?
But it seems other video game makers don't want to rely on a consumer tailwind. Divnick says some rivals unveiled competing games months ago, and others are planning to hold off their releases until after the holidays, thus avoiding a battle with the shoot 'em up game. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Before the economy took a detour south, Americans were doing two things at a record-setting pace, shopping and buying houses. So then maybe it's not too surprising that somebody came up with the bright idea to combine the two. Mallpartments are malls with apartments in them, and they were supposed to be the next big thing. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith tells us how that's working out.
The Americana Mall in Glendale, California, was designed to look like Main Street, you know, where people used to shop before there were malls. There's a paved street, a trolley, a big lawn with a fountain. There are restaurants and shops like Forever 21 and Tiffany. And above them, hundreds of apartments and condos. Welcome to the Mall of the Future, or what was supposed to be the future. Suzanne Mulvey is a real estate strategist with PPR.
The ability to unlock some of the value that sits in that actual real estate enticed these developers to come up with alternative ways to get more value out of the same property.
Mallpartments went up in Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., and Arizona. Then the real estate market collapsed. Apartments above one Boston mall went into foreclosure. The Americana's done well with rentals, but half the condos, which sell for between $500,000 and $2 million, are unsold. Real estate consultant Spence Mell says it's not just the economy. Manufacturing Main Street is tricky.
Those areas have grown organically over, you know, a 100-year period. To just throw them up like Disneyland, people have trouble with that.
Some people.
I never want to leave. It's that great. Nobody paid me to say that, by the way.
Paul DeGarabedian moved into the Americana a year ago.
You're living in a mall and people laugh when you say that, but it's a way of life that I love. I have like five or six restaurants right here that I can literally walk to. I can do shopping for clothes, whatever I want to do. And then they have events all the time, like they're putting up the big Christmas tree here. It's right outside my window. They have Santa's Village. There's the hustle and bustle. I never feel alone. There's always people around.
The Americana offers concierge service, yoga classes on the lawn, a farmer's market every Saturday. Real estate strategist Suzanne Mulvey says these perks are crucial because mall apartment living still presents a major psychological hurdle.
I believe in the mixed-use concept. I just don't know that I want to live at the mall.
At the Americana in Glendale, California, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Oracle today has some words for the European Commission. The software giant says it will vigorously oppose, that's their words, the EC's objections to its deal to buy Sun Microsystems. Now, the EC objected on antitrust grounds, and that's thrown a wrench in the $7 billion deal. And it's in direct contrast with the U.S. Justice Department's green light of the deal. A Justice Department that some say the Obama administration has made more sensitive to antitrust concerns. Let's bring in Kevin Allison, who is Lex columnist for the Financial Times in London. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, good morning.
Why the discrepancy between the United States Justice Department giving this deal the go-ahead and the European Commission saying, wait a second, we have this objection?
It is strange because Christine Varney has pledged to reassert the government's role in policing anti-competitive behavior. Theoretically, that should jibe well with the European Commission, which has always been more activist about policing competition concerns. But in this case, it's the European Commission which is at loggerheads with the U.S. Justice Department about whether or not the Sun Microsystems deal should be allowed to proceed.
So how does this move forward? I mean, what's the likelihood that the deal goes through with this objection?
Oracle could always walk away, but it probably doesn't want to, because that would mean that some of Sun's more valuable software, such as Java and Solaris, might fall into the hands of Oracle's competitors. So Oracle still has an incentive to get the deal done. It just has been unusually vocal about its objections to Brussels' ruling.
Kevin, how does this affect someone who's going to buy a computer today?
Well, for your average laptop owner, your average person who's listening to their iPod tapping away on their Mac is probably not going to have too much to worry about from whether or not an Oracle or Sun deal goes through. But it's actually very important because this software helps companies lower costs and improve the way they can serve customers. A company like Amazon, for example, has to manage immense amounts of data that it gets from customers about purchases that they're making online. It's a massive amount of data, and it's those companies that are going to have to face some of the competitive issues that could arise from Oracle buying Sun.
All right, Kevin Allison, the Financial Times Lex columnist, we thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And finally, from the Marketplace, Whose Line Is It Anyway department, Mutual of Omaha Insurance has decided to settle its lawsuit against Oprah Winfrey's Harpo Productions over aha moments. Earlier this year, Mutual started an ad campaign that using the slogan,
proud sponsor of life's aha moments.
The company says it sought a trademark for the phrase last year. No one objected to it. But on her show and in her magazine, Winfrey often talks with guests about aha moments as flashes of understanding. And Winfrey's people sent a letter asking Mutual to stop using the slogan. Our aha moment? Both sides say the issue was settled amicably. From Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.